You are listening to Sunday morning service at Unity of Tustin. Unity of Tustin is a mystical, spiritual community radiating light and love, transforming consciousness. Our mission is healing lives, building dreams, and realizing God. Now, Senior Minister, Reverend Carolyn Mathlin.
Good morning, and welcome to Unity of Tustin on this beautiful last Sunday of January. It is good to be back with you. I was out of town last week, and I am heartened to hear that some of you braved the torrential rain to be here with us. I got to experience the repercussions of that because my flight was delayed, canceled. So I will certainly be putting a bead in the bowl for the experience of the airport where we were surrendered, and also in action to get on a flight down from Oakland to Orange County before the airport closes. So, in the world and also totally surrendered and at peace. So hopefully you'll be continuing to share your stories with me as well as placing your own beads of how the surrender experiment is working in your life as we continue this series. And so we are together today in spiritual community. It is always my heart and my joy and my great honor to be with us as we come together to practice, especially during these times where it is even more important to stay anchored in this truth of divine remembrance, of divinity that we are. So let us join together as we have physically, also spiritually in prayer. So I invite you to take this time to close your eyes and take a deep breath and release it. Feeling the power and the presence of this living moment. Sensing into that question, what does it feel like to be alive here and now? You might even take that for granted, but the truth is, that is a living question. What does it feel like to be alive now? You might sense into the body or perhaps your heart or your mind or this cosmic connection with the soul. Or be aware of all of them simultaneously. So as we continue to lean into this question of what does it feel like? What does it mean to be alive? Now, we also turn our orientation to be centered in God, centered in spirit, that we are the divine expressing as us in the beauty and the sanctuary of our own heart, allowing aspects of our life that might feel mysterious or unknowing to come into alignment with this new orientation, to first be anchored in God, first be anchored in spirit. And so in that consciousness, in that intention, we say, thank you, beloved one. And so it is. Amen. Christ has no body now but yours. I am that. I had a congregant say to me a lot. We used to use that mantra a lot, and he would say, I always want to raise my hand and say, what is that? ever thought about that? That I am that. It is I am the all-pervading reality. I am God that is here. I am God that is transcendent. I am the cosmic consciousness. I am cosmic God. I am all of it. And in that claiming, there's an activation This is a mantra you can repeat while you're at the grocery store, while you're in line, while you're at work, while you're in your car, while you're watching TV, especially the news. Because it reorients ourselves to first being based in a spiritual world. And then, from that, there is also this world of form. Doesn't mean we transcend in trash. It does mean that we are oriented first in what is real. We're going to talk about how that can start to show up in some very profound ways, whether you're working with something at a personal level, at a national level, or at a world level, at an international level. This is the question that's on my heart, and it's the question that I see is on the consciousness of those who are waking up, or those who are awake. But the first question is, are we available to the activation? There, in Debbie's article, Debbie De La Cuesta, our new board president's article in the quarterly newsletter, she begins with this phrase, "May you live in interesting times." Now, for some quotes, it's a Chinese curse, and for others, it's just a Chinese saying. But you know, the fact remains, and I don't know, for some it might be a blessing. I don't know. May you live in interesting times. And I'm personally feeling that that's a very alive statement right now. We are living in very interesting times. And I would also say that there are other moments on this planet where we have lived in interesting times as a collective. What's even more fascinating now is that we are not only, and it was only available like at the collective level to deep meditators in times past, because there was no interconnectivity of news or of social media sources where if something happens in one part of the world, the whole rest of the world can know about it. That was only available to people who had traveled the inner planes enough, who had opened up enough to be able to experience the cosmic or the collective consciousness, the collective heart, and the collective mind, divine mind, as Charles Fillmore, the co-founder of Unity, called it. That is no longer the case. So, you know, we can look at this at a personal level and see that there are some interesting times that are evolving for many of us. I have talked with and prayed with many of you who are walking through some challenging times right now, some interesting times right now, at a personal level, whether it be something going on in the family or dis-ease or loss of a job, whatever it may, however it may be outpicturing, but there's this sense of something is stirring. For others of us, if we expand the lens a little wider, we might be turning on the news or looking at our Facebook social media feed, depending on where you get your news these days. And you might be seeing that there's some interesting things happening at a national level right now. May you live in interesting times. And something is stirring. Whatever you label it, there is something stirring right now at a national level. And then for those of us who look at and are cognizant of what's happening at a world level, the same is true. At a global level, there is something stirring. There is a lot that's up. And the question is, how are we going to use and work with this time? Because typically, and we're oriented to finding and having some safe harbor as humans. Something that we can rely on that says, this is untouchable. This is safe. When everything else is going on, when the S is hitting the fan out there, I can count on this to be relied on. And I'm finding internally that that is becoming less and less true for me. That there's something in the outer world that I can 100% rely on to be 100% consistent and be my safe harbor. Is anyone else experiencing that? That's called the loss of innocence. A childish innocence. There's a spiritual maturity that's getting developed when that happens. Because, you know, like when you're a kid, and it was for me, when something would be stirring at school, I knew I could always go home and count on my family to hold me. That was reliable. As I stand here today, I'm looking out at my world, and while there are pockets of stability and safety, as a general rule, if I'm looking to the world to be my safety right now, it's harder to find. Can you sense into that? There's something stirring. So, what does that mean? It means for me that I need to shift my gaze and my focus, my point of connection and contact with this world. Instead of looking at this world for my safety first, I shift it to that consciousness that finds its refuge, as the Buddhists say, the refuge in the Buddha. The refuge in the Dharma, the refuge in the Sangha. What does that mean? Finding refuge in the divine first. Finding refuge in the spiritual community. Not in an organization or an institution, but in the direct connections, although you hopefully will find that here as well. But really it is about the spiritual community as a whole. Beloved meeting beloved. You can find refuge in that. Sacred companions making the journey together. There is refuge in that. There is safety in that. Finding refuge in the Dharma or the teachings that remind us of what is true. I am that, so hum. I am the all-pervading reality, the transcendent and the immanent of all existence. When our orientation shifts, then there's a new availability to these interesting times. And our refuge, our safe harbor, is now oriented first in what is real, and then emanates out into this world, which is also real, but it's a different vibration of real. It's a denser vibration of real, and it's a more challenging expression of reality, because it has to do with a world of 10,000 things, as the Sufis say. There's all sorts of interpretations of how things can start to show up. It's a lot more muddy to navigate. So I'm seeing this time, whether you look at it at a personal level, you look at it at a national level, you look at it at a global level, as being a time of activation. This is a time of activation. And it is an activation of that new paradigm that we've been talking about, I've been talking about for 6 years now, and my predecessor before me, Dr. Marge Britt, was talking about as well, about a sea change. That was some of the words that she used. There's a sense of something is shifting. And it's fascinating because just like everything else on the spiritual journey, at some level, a part of me had an idea of how it was going to change and shift and what that was going to look like. That's why I love working with this material. This was for me personally, and this was for us collectively on the surrender experiment. How to hold these times in a way that is aligned with spiritual principle and yet doesn't negate or deny how we are being asked to show up in the world. This is not a man who goes off to a mountaintop and never engages in the world anymore. In fact, that's his dream. And through the surrender experiment that he participated in, that he used as the template for his life, that never came to pass. Because he was open enough, he was available enough to the activation to allow for what was needing to come forward for him. And so the question that he asks and that we've been asking is a very powerful one, because it asks what would happen if we respected the flow of life and used our free will to participate with what's unfolding instead of fighting it. That might feel incredibly uncomfortably relevant for some of you. It has for me. What would happen if we respected the flow of life and used our free will to participate in what's unfolding instead of fighting it? So what does that mean? When we look at these times as activation, whether it is at a personal level or if it's at a collective level. A time of activation is a time where there's this divine energy that's coming in. And the more we're available to it, the more it can harness our sense of who we are in the world and use us. Use me, God, I stand for you. Not from a place of personal power or ego, but from this clarity of what is real and true and is being asked to come into the world. One of the activation stories that Michael Singer talks about in this third section of the book that we're really focusing on today, of moving from solitude to service, is when he is asked to help bring Swami Muktananda into his into the Florida area. So he describes that process that he's a reluctant servant, but he keeps saying yes, because what would it look like if instead of fighting what was happening, he used his personal will to be in service to what was unfolding. So he talks about and he describes his own activation story when he sat in Shaktipat, or in a Christian term, it's like the descent of the Holy Spirit. This being overcome with grace. In the Eastern tradition, that would be Shaktipat, this arising of the Kundalini energy. Same kind of concept, different terms for different religious organizations, with different spiritual traditions. But in this Shaktipat, in this descent of grace, he realizes his life will never be the same. Something got activated in him. And I was reminded of my own moments of activation in life, where all of a sudden, something's happened and it's never quite been the same again. There's a great spiritual and biblical tradition for this as well. And it's found in the story of Moses. And I'm sharing this because I see us right now on the precipice of our own Moses experience. I'm feeling that. And it's, how are we going to be invited to or called to participate? That's the question. So the story of Moses is one where he's born and his mother keeps him as long as he can for 3 months and then realizes that she has to let him go if there's any chance that he's going to live. So she puts him into the basket of reeds, and she puts him in the river. And Pharaoh's daughter is right there, and she swoops him up, and she sees how beautiful Moses is, and she decides to raise him as her own. So he grows up into this life of privilege, all the time knowing that he is Hebrew. But in the Hebrew people are enslaved at this time. But for Moses, he is favored and is allowed to have all of the privileges of being in Pharaoh's family. At some point as a young adult, he is out amongst the crowds and he sees a guard beating a slave, a Hebrew slave. So he, in anger, in vengeance, in rage, when he thinks no one is looking, beats and kills the guard. And he buries him in the sand. And he thinks no one's going to find out. This is a spiritual lesson in and of itself. Remember the comic, The Shadow Knows? We always know. So, the next day he's out wandering around and he sees two Hebrew slaves fighting. And he says, "Stop that, why are you fighting?" And they say to one of them, says to him, "Well, are you gonna kill us like you killed the guard?" So now he's concerned because now it's not just him who's holding the secret. So eventually Pharaoh finds out, and so Moses runs. He flees. Again, this has implications in our journey now, right? When something happens, instead of owning it, the Moses in us can leave, whether it's to numb out psychologically or to physically leave. To run away. And he journeys to this land called Midian, where he befriends a farmer. The farmer allows him to marry one of the daughters. Moses has a son. He has absolutely no intention of returning to Egypt. None. His life is fine again. Fine-ish. But then one day, he's out tending the flock, and he sees this, what? Burning bush. A bush that will not be consumed by the flame. And he goes to find out, as any of us would, he approaches the bush that would not be consumed. And he hears a voice that says, "Take off your sandals, for you are standing on holy ground." You are standing on holy ground. In these moments of activation, there is a sense of holiness. There's also a biblical history of being completely afraid. You hear the angels that say, "Fear not," like that's the first thing out of their mouths. Fear not. Okay, great news. Take off your sandals, for you are standing on holy ground. And it's there that Moses is given the commission to go back and set his people free, to which Moses is the reluctant leader. There's a teaching that he was a stammerer, he was a stutterer, he just wanted nothing to do with going back to Egypt, because it meant, in his mind, death. And in a certain degree, there was a death. There was a death of an old self that did have to be released in order for him to step into what he was being called to do. So then the famous line when he says to God, because at the time there were lots of different gods that people worshipped. And so his question to the bush was, "Which god are you?" And the bush, God, says, "I am that I am. Tell them I am has sent you." And actually the translation, the original Hebrew is I aming. It's an active verb. I aming. I am creating as I am creating. You cannot put me in a box. Tell them that God has sent you. The God of their people And it is from there that then he returns back. But this moment of activation that is met then with willingness. When we are living in times in our personal life and in our collective life where something is coming in, where there's an activation, it must be also met with a willingness. And this is the teaching of David Hawkins, who talks about willingness being the capacity to overcome inner resistance to life and be committed to participation, to committed full participation. There's an alignment with life-giving qualities that are not available when we are in resistance, when we are seeing everything as a battle. Because when we see, and when we have individual desires and things that are about our agenda, we automatically set up a winner and a loser. Our whole sports system is based on this, competing desires, right? And who's going to win? Who's going to be the victor? In the consciousness of willingness, the ability to be activated and to allow for this consciousness to carry us, there is a new availability that is no longer about the personal self alone. And it's easier to accept our human imperfections for ourselves and for each other. Because there's an alignment to how can this be used? How can this be allowed to inform me so I can do better? One of the things that David Hawkins says is that adopting a positive attitude immediately invites in an attractor field of an entire field of consciousness that then unwittingly begins to alter the personality and bring benefits to one's own life as well as those of others. This is in the field of willingness. So after the activation, this divine idea, the stage one of our meditation gardens, this let there be light, this divine infilling, there is the capacity for willingness then can carry us into being used in a way that we couldn't be otherwise. And from that, David Hawkins says, willingness supports intention and facilitates the purification process of spiritual evolution, which often requires the willingness to face inner discomfort for the sake of reaching a higher goal. So the activation brings forth the willingness, brings forth the work. Willingness supports intention and facilitates the purification process of spiritual evolution, which often requires the willingness to face inner discomfort for the sake of reaching a higher goal. The Moses in us that says, I have no intention of going back to Egypt, and does it anyway. This is a moment of honesty to share with you. I have been in this question before us, before me, because I've been sitting with my own inner discomfort around a lot of the outpicturing of some of the values that I'm seeing emerge in our national consciousness that feel so out of alignment with my experience of my values for this country. And I've been sitting with this inner discomfort at a personal level and at a national level, knowing that this is a time of great activation And I felt, you know, when during the election, I felt like something died. Something beautiful died. And I had to really sit with what and why I was experiencing that. Knowing that I was also being called to hold this community during this process as well. Some of you, I'm gonna reveal something that some of you might be shocked at. We have both Republicans and Democrats in this community on the whole spectrum. So how do I, as your minister, hold this with you while also being in my own process? This has been a very alive question for me. And what I continue to come back to is this is an activation that is not about politics, but is about seeing what is emerging and aligning with that. Because I had, and I'm sure I'm the only one, when we kept talking about this new paradigm coming in, I had a vision of what that was going to look like and how we were going to get there. Anyone else felt that way? Whether it's a personal thing you want to cultivate forgiveness or healing, and you have a vision of what it's going to look like at the end, and you have the vision of how it's going to look in the middle to get there. Yeah, your 10-step process to forgiveness and a happy, healthy life from here on out. Mm-hmm. It's really marketable. It's a very, we want that surety, right? Same thing, we want that safe harbor, that place where we know we can always feel safe and count and relied on for that. So in the same way, I had my own disillusionment with, is this what the new paradigm looks like? Is this what I've been inviting people into cultivating for the last 6 years? And I really had to have, as we say in some circles, a come to Jesus moment with myself. And my participation with the Evolutionary Collective and some of the work that we're going to be doing this afternoon really helped finally. I'd been shifting it already, but this last weekend where I was up in Berkeley, we did some more work, and I finally shifted my orientation. Because I had a vision of how it was going to look. And there's a beautiful Sufi saying. It says, God will be God. We do not know. God will be God. And just like that question of surrender, instead of aligning with my resistance to what I'm seeing, I need to first align with what is real and true and see and participate in the world from that consciousness. That surrender practice that we worked with 2 weeks ago of first paying attention to the voice in our head. One of the ways that Michael Singer talks about, his voice goes nuclear. Has your voice ever gone nuclear? And I love what he says. He talks about when he was watching his voice go nuclear, he would say, you are not my spiritual advisor. You are my spiritual burden. When your voice goes nuclear, it's not about numbing out or not paying attention to facts. And I will also say, facts and news are two different things these days. Facts are facts. News is entertainment. So my intention is to not numb out to facts and to stay awake and alert, but also completely available, which automatically shifts my orientation from getting so riled in the world that I lose myself, I go into battle. Or for some of us, we go into despair or overwhelm. It's untenable, so why bother? Both of those can be Moses, the one that kills and the one who flees. And during a time of activation where there's this capacity to be influenced by the divine in a whole new way, there is this opportunity to align our willingness to the point where we start to face the inner resistance, the inner discomfort that actually is about the spiritual purification process. And that for the first time allows us to show up in the world not from a numbed out place, not from an angry place or an egoic anger, but from a very clear, powerful place. And that was what Karen and Debbie were talking about earlier, some of the practices that this afternoon we're going to be working with. So if you've been particularly feeling that, I encourage you to be with us this afternoon. There's an opportunity there for all of us to truly allow this time for activation to be that in your life, in our collective life. And to shift that orientation from either anger or despair or wherever you might be falling into a place of real power. Feeling the significance of this moment. And again, this could be something you're working with at a personal level. Overwhelm and disillusionment can happen in all forms, or it can also be at a more national or global level. We are living in interesting, beautiful times where we need each other to show up in this new way. Not in the way some of us thought we were going to get to show up, but in the way we're being asked to show up. The true surrender experiment, where we let go of what not our we don't surrender to the outer circumstances. What are we surrendering? Our inner resistance to him. Because that's when the willingness can take us. Yeah, surrender isn't about giving in or conforming to outer conditions. This is huge because that to most of us is what surrender means. I give in to you. I accept defeat to you. That's not what this surrender is. That's not what this experiment is. This surrender is about letting go of our inner resistance to outer conditions. So just like in that willingness, we're actually available to be used, to be moved, to be in participation with how we're being asked to show up today, right now. Knowing that tomorrow will be guided and how we're going to show up then. Moving from solitude, the sense of I know, to a sense of how may I serve. In your bulletin, we had this suggestion a couple weeks ago, and so this is our opportunity to do it. On page 4, I was asked, can you put that in our soul work, not our homework, but our soul work in the bulletin? And I said, absolutely. So you'll see this week's practice and the last practice. The last practice was to practice surrender. This week is to immerse in God all around. Don't numb out. There's the difference. But to continue to meditate and even practice that soham meditation, I am that, during your meditation time. If you're practicing 5 minutes morning and night, I invite you to increase it a little. What about 7 minutes morning and night or 10 minutes morning and night? Practice that activating mantra, soham, or I am that. And then I'd like you to really invite you to reflect on past or current moments of activation in your own life. When you have felt that stirring and that swirling, where something feels like it's changing in your life, that disillusionment, that end of a childlike innocence of sort. What's resulted when you have been in those moments of activation? Or what is resulting? Lean into that. And then how has your relationship with surrender aided or prevented the activation? Start to really notice, has there been willingness or has there been resistance? This is, remember, This is going to require you to face your inner discomfort for the sake of reaching your higher goal. But it's an important and worthy exploration. How has your relationship with surrender aided or prevented this activation? Because we are in an activation cycle. Something's changing. How and what's going to look like? God knows, because God will be God. I aming that I aming. But how are we able to be in surrendered action with that?
Unity of Tustin is supported through your generous tithes and love offerings. To support Unity of Tustin online, please click the donate button on our homepage. Thank you for listening.